This is episode 44 of Everyday Wellness. Quit this, start winning with Lynn Marie Morsky. I'm Dr. Kelly Donahue, health psychologist and mind-body coach, here with my co-host, Cynthia Thurlow, nurse practitioner and functional nutritionist. We have over 25 years of combined experience in health and wellness. Our goal here at Everyday Wellness is to share easy strategies to help as many people as possible become healthier. If you'd like to help us reach that goal, you can leave us a rating or review on iTunes. The process takes just a couple of minutes and helps listeners like you who are looking for high-quality health and wellness podcasts find us. We are so grateful that you are here. And now, let's get started.
Welcome to Everyday Wellness. Wellness is the result of the decisions that you make every day. It's your mindset and the thoughts you believe. Wellness is the food you put in your body and the relationship you have with yourself and others. Wellness is your work and meaning. Join us on Everyday Wellness as we explore ways that you can choose wellness today.
Good morning. We're really excited to have Lynn Marie Morsky here with us this morning. She is a quitting evangelist. She helps people quit anything that's no longer serving them, like jobs, relationships, or mindsets, through her book, Quitting by Design, and her podcast, Quit Happens, along with speaking and coaching. I love the quitting evangelist. She is also a board-certified physician in family medicine and sports medicine, currently working at the VA. In addition, she is an attorney and former adjunct law professor. When not doctoring, lawyering, or preaching the gospel of strategic quitting, Lynn Marie can be found doing yoga, playing multiple musical instruments, and dancing like everyone's watching. You sound like a true Renaissance woman. Welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
You have achieved so much. It seems as if you've had a lot of non-quitting, kind of stick-to-it activities to be both a physician and an attorney, among other things. Can you tell us how you came to understand the value of quitting and how quitting has actually helped you to create what seems to be an amazing life that you have?
Absolutely. I started making big quits at age 20. I wasn't a doctor or lawyer to start with. I was a multimedia designer, and not a great one and not a happy one. And even though everything in my kind of type A, you have chosen this field, you've gone on this path, I was even halfway through grad school in multimedia, despite everything seeming like, okay, you've made this decision, stick with it, I knew I could not be miserable for the rest of my life. And I made a big quit and I started over and I went to medical school. And that quit had served me so well, and other smaller quits that I had made prior to that, that by the time it was about 2000, I think 2000 and somewhere 11, 12, 13, that I heard a podcast. It was an episode of Freakonomics, and it was called The Upside of Quitting. And everything they were talking about there was exactly as I had always understood quitting, which is like, there's an opportunity cost if you don't quit, or that the sunk cost fallacy is a fallacy. I had never thought, oh, I've dedicated this much time or money to a thing that should keep me in it. That never made any sense. So all the ways that a lot of people kind of get caught up and have a difficulty quitting, they weren't issues that had ever stopped me from quitting. And so I started to realize not only is quitting as great, you know, now here's proof that the rest of society is now starting to talk about the fact that quitting is as useful as I thought it was, but I realized it was kind of my superpower. And I kept that in the back of my head so that at law school graduation, I was giving a speech and they said, you know, okay, what do you want to talk about? And I was thinking, like, what would be useful to pass along that most people don't talk about? And so I did my law school graduation speech on quitting, because for me, if I hadn't quit, I wouldn't be a doctor lawyer. If I hadn't quit things like, if, for example, I've quit sports medicine, if I hadn't quit sports medicine, I wouldn't have been able to go to law school. Like, it's so clear looking back how many, the only reason I have so many things on my resume is because I've strategically quit anything that wasn't working for me. So I never got stuck in one thing. I was like, oh, this isn't working. Let's go try the next thing. And I never had a problem with that. And luckily, nobody in my life who had any influence, i.e. my parents, ever had a problem with that either. They were like, do what makes you happy. You know, they just kind of trusted me. Thank goodness. You know, not that I'm not sure they would have stopped me or I would have let that stop me, but it's never hurts to have some parental support for what seems like crazy things. So I just was able to look back and be like, this has been so useful in my life. I would love to help pass along this skill to others.
So I would love to hear a little bit more about what strategic quitting actually is and how does that differ from, you know, plain old quitting.
Plain old quitting, I often equate with giving up. And I think that's what society tends to do because they have that quitters never win, winners never quit thing that everybody always talks about. And I'm pretty sure that they mean giver uppers never win, because if you look at society, Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, Mark Zuckerberg all quit Harvard, I believe. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure that most of us would consider them winners in some, at least a business or technology aspect, right? So we know that quitters do win. Who doesn't win is the giver uppers, right? Mm-hmm. So strategic quitting is different from giving up, because giving up is like, all right, one day something was hard, or for a few days it was a little hard, and I'm done. Strategic quitting is when you have examined, asked your intuition, is this thing serving me anymore? And realized it is not serving you, and then strategically planned through, okay, what part of it isn't serving me? You don't up and quit everything. You don't just walk away and run away from your problems. You're like, okay, I know there's something in my work that isn't working. I've pinpointed it's the commute. I'm going to find a way to strategically quit my commute, maybe by asking to do telework or, you know, just work from home a few days a week. And then you've gone through overcoming the fears related to quitting, and you've prepared your logistics so that your health and your relationships and your finances are in order by the time you've made a quit, so that you don't just up and quit and now you're suddenly homeless because you have no source of income. Or if you quit a relationship, suddenly you're super depressed because you haven't prepared for it. And then the last step in strategic quitting is making sure that you make the quit in the way that preserves relationships as best as possible and burns the fewest bridges. All of that's very different from, like, one day your job is hard and you just were like, I'm out, I'm giving up, I'm done, you know, or you'll probably say I'm quitting, but you put no thought into it. Then everybody's in a lurch. You left the people that you're working with a bad taste in their mouth. You may be in dire straits financially. So those are two different things. It's whether you just kind of up and quit or give up in a huff versus strategically planning out and realizing this thing isn't working for me and I need to move on to something that will serve me better, but I need to do it methodically.
I love that. You know, I think that many of our listeners can really relate to that. I know personally for myself, I left clinical medicine 3 years ago. I'm a nurse practitioner and had done that for 16 years. And, you know, when the realization came that that was the right decision for me to make, even though my husband thought I was nuts, not seriously, but just was kind of baffled by the decision to kind of transition to being an entrepreneur. It was one of the best decisions I ever made because it was so well thought out and executed. And, you know, I'd spent so much time laboring over that. And I agree with you that there's a huge distinction between something that's thoughtfully considered and reviewed and examined and someone that just decides, you know, arbitrarily one day, it's just too hard. They're just not going to do X, Y, or Z anymore. But I love that mindset. And I love the terminology strategic quitting. I'll have to continue to utilize that in my verbiage moving forward.
Thank you.
I also love that you break it down. So it's not just like I'm quitting the whole thing. It's examining what portion of this is not serving me well. And how can I quit that and change that to something that will better serve me? Because I think as a psychologist, I see patterns that people get into. If they start quitting things and they don't examine what was going on, then that pattern just keeps continuing.
Yes.
Do you see that too?
Absolutely. Like the proverbial, I've seen this so many times, and I'm sure you have too, when people get kind of in a rut, they just up and leave their entire life. Like, okay, I'm leaving, I live in San Diego. I'm leaving San Diego, which means I'm leaving my job. I'm leaving my circle of friends, my support network. I'm leaving my city. And then I say, well, but you're bringing you with you. Like, if you haven't stopped and examined what isn't yes. working, then that's just going to repeat in the next city that you move to. You can't run away from yourself and whatever maybe mindset issues might be causing. I mean, maybe the thing causing you grief is a mindset thing. It has nothing to do with the city you live in, nothing to do with the job you have, or the relationships you have. And if you don't stop and examine that, well, that mindset's going to follow you. And so, like you said, the exact same thing is going to repeat itself over. So the big part of strategic quitting, in addition to the steps that I just talked about, is after the quit, remark to yourself at least on what wasn't working so that you don't do it again.
That's so valuable, so important that we can learn from those things and change them. Well, you know, if we think a little bit more about mindset in doing our research to understand more about you, you have described your family as living on the wrong side of the tracks. And I imagine that there was kind of a certain mindset that went along with that, and that you indicated that your first quit was beneficial to you, that sort of continued things. But coming from that sort of background, it seems as if, you know, quitting something that was good would be contradictory to getting to moving forward. So I'm wondering if you can just tell us any more about how that mindset of quitting being a good thing has facilitated your success.
One of the most common concerns I see in perimenopause and menopause is hair loss, hair breakage, hair shedding. And knowing that over 80 million Americans are impacted by this is both reassuring, but it's wonderful to know that there are products available that can help with these symptoms. Divi is good for those with hair shedding or thinning due to stress in perimenopause or menopause. They can be helpful for addressing dry scalp. And have you wanted to take control of your hair health but aren't sure where to start? This is where Divi can be hugely impactful. I love their scalp serum. And we know that the scalp serum improves the appearance of breakage, nourishes our hair follicles, and removes product and oil buildup. There are some key ingredients, including tea tree oil, which works to reduce and prevent excess oil buildup on the scalp, amino acids that help to strengthen hair, fight frizz, which is my greatest concern, and reduce breakage, and copper tripeptide 1, which is a small protein composed of the three amino acids to facilitate a clean and hydrated scalp, as well as hyaluronic acid, which is nourishing and hydrating to our scalps. As I mentioned, Divi is not just for those experiencing hair loss. I have found it to be hugely helpful for scalp health, and all of Divi's products, including their shampoos and conditioners, come together to create a full daily solution that helps women nourish their hair and get to the root of scalp health. Do you want to take back control of your hair and scalp health and do it with clean, science-backed ingredients? Go to diviofficial.com/Cynthia or enter Cynthia at checkout for 20% off your first order. That's diviofficial.com/Cynthia for 20% off your first order. As I mentioned, my favorite product is the scalp serum. And now that we're in the deep throes of winter weather, it is so wonderfully nourishing and moisturizing. Americans spend an average of 90% of their time indoors and take about 20,000 breaths a day. The indoor air that we breathe is 2 to 5 times more polluted than outdoor air, and in some circumstances, up to 100 times more polluted, according to the EPA. And did you know that air pollution is responsible for nearly 7 million premature deaths globally? So what's the solution? I want to introduce you to a product by Air Doctor that has captured the attention of established media outlets like CNN, ABC, and more. Air Doctor filters out 99.99% of dangerous contaminants so that your lungs don't have to. This includes pollutants such as allergens, pollen, pet dander, dust mites, mold spores, and even bacteria and viruses that have the potential to go on and make us sick. Air Doctor comes with a 30-day, breathe easy, money-back guarantee. So if you don't love it, just send it back for a refund minus shipping. Head to airdoctorpro.com and use code Cynthia. You'll receive up to $300 off air purifiers. Exclusive to podcast customers, you will also receive a free 3-year warranty on any unit, which is an additional $84 in value. Look at this special offer by going to airdoctorpro.com and use promo code Cynthia. I absolutely love my air filters. They're an integral component to ensuring that the air that my family breathes in our home is as safe as possible.
Well, I believe firmly that you can only be truly successful if you enjoy what you're doing. And I mean, we know the research, right? The big thing about how to achieve happiness is being in a flow state as much of the time as possible. And even though at the time of that, there wasn't that verbiage put to it, I knew that. And by the way, this was not something that I necessarily consciously knew, but my body rejects the wrong situation very, vividly. It, like, I'm just very uncomfortable when situations are wrong, and it's very hard to be performing at your best. For example, in medicine, like Cynthia, this, you know this. This is really hard when you're in clinical practice and you are not feeling your best. You're like, I'm super anxious. How do you then bring your best treatment to a patient who deserves 100% of your best when you're so anxious and so uncomfortable yourself? And I've always thought, like, I would love to be successful. I'm a driven person. I want to be successful in my chosen career. And I was always well aware that being miserable in a position was never going to make me a success. And even if I was somehow, despite my miserableness, good at it, I was never going to feel like a success because I didn't want to be there.
Right.
And so that was kind of my guiding light. And that's what finally eventually brought me to quitting evangelism, is that I was like, I need to stop and examine what is going to make me want to get out of bed for the rest of my life. And maybe not even the rest of my life, but just for, you know, the next phase. Because by the time I wrote the book and did the podcast and all that, I had already been a doctor and a lawyer and a multimedia designer and in a startup and all these things. And I was like, well, I have a great list of things I don't love doing. And I also know from those things what I did like doing, because that's the other part of strategic quitting. Like, remark on what parts of the thing you're quitting that you did like. And then I had these data sets to move forward with, and I thought, like, let's work with my strengths and what I'm passionate about and find a way to merge those. And that's when I asked myself, like, what am I good at that I would like to share with others? Quitting is what came up, because I thought it's undervalued. It's a thing that I happen to be naturally good at, and I would love to share that superpower with others. And yeah, so I feel as though, had I not quit, I just know where I would have been. I would have still been back in St. Louis, which is where I started, working as a very, probably not even working as a multimedia designer, because I was really so bad at it that I was fairly certain I was going, I mean, like, the writing was on the wall when I quit. They had hired somebody younger than me over me. And, like, I was like, okay, I'm not going to be a success here. And I have, you know, I feel like I have a success-driven DNA that was never going to be fulfilled if I kept doing that. And so I just feel really fortunate that I realized at a young age that quitting was definitely the path to getting what you wanted and not something to be stigmatized.
And I love that you think about it not in terms of a failure. I mean, there's a lot of talk now that even failure is a necessary component of success, but you could have chosen to sort of dwell on the negative side of things and see things as a failure and have that end right there. But you completely turned it on its head. And I think that that's so valuable for so many people who might be stuck in that place where they see quitting as being a failure.
Yeah, I see quitting as being a preventative to failure. Because what would have been a failure in the multimedia world is if I had been fired, right? As if I had just hung around and waiting for the writing on the wall to get larger and larger. And then they would have hired another person over me and been like, Lynn Murray, you're doing like nothing at this point, so you're gone. That would have been failing multimedia. To me, there's a big difference between taking the empowered step of strategically quitting something at the stage where you know it's not working versus waiting to be told that you are failing at a thing.
Well, I also think, you know, the other aspect of strategic quitting is having the courage to kind of help that, have that self-reflection. You know, you mentioned, you know, you just didn't feel like that job was a good fit. You didn't feel like you were growing. But I think so many people, you know, whether they choose to or not, you know, courage is such a huge component of just acknowledging that, you know, you're having those feelings or you're not comfortable or you feel like you're in the wrong place, in the wrong job, in the wrong relationship, in the wrong location. Just having that, you know, awareness, that honesty with yourself to, you know, self-reflect. I always say it's that, you know, kind of self-evolution that people can kind of look inwardly and objectively look at themselves and say if something is or is not working.
Yeah, absolutely. And you had asked a question, Robert, you guys had asked a question before about how my upbringing had kind of like clashed with my desire to quit, as if like, okay, being from the wrong side of the tracks and, you know, that would make people like, oh, you've got a job, you should stay in the job. But for me, I was brought up in a family where my dad was miserable every day of his life because he didn't like what he was doing. And let's be honest, they'll never hear this. My parents stayed together forever, still are. I wouldn't say that that's something that they really enjoy. And so I saw a life of what staying in a thing does to you, and it doesn't make you super fulfilled, feeling and happy. And so I had every example of like, no, if you, and even my dad would say like, if you're not happy in something, get out, like you can't be miserable for life. Now, he also, when I went to leave multimedia and join medicine, he's like, now you've already wasted one degree, essentially. Don't waste another. Like, make sure you know what you're doing. You know, so there is still that, there's plenty of old school mindset there, but I didn't see it as wasting a degree. Like, without my bachelor's degree in multimedia, I wouldn't have been able to go to med school. You have to get a bachelor's in something. But seeing what being stuck does to people is what made me, at least at a subconscious level, never want to be stuck. And so regardless of what side of the tracks it came from, I equated that, like, look at what being stuck gets you. It's not financially well off. Like, because again, you know, I mean, and my dad, I'm sure, was good at his job enough, but like, if you don't love doing a thing, and he didn't, it was like an inherited family business, then to me, it was like, well, if you don't love it, clearly you're not going to be successful at it. So that's what I saw from an early age. And I think that kind of spurned my quitting path.
And I think that you give some good examples there with quitting related to a job. And that's kind of what comes to mind for me when I think of quitting. But you also talk a lot about quitting in different contexts, like quitting relationships or aspects of your job or physical activity or other things that just aren't working. Can you talk some more about quitting beyond just a job resignation?
Absolutely. The same strategic quitting principles I just talked about apply to everything that's external. Like, okay, do you want to quit a hobby that isn't working for you? I did the martial art of capoeira. I trained capoeira for 7 years. I recently, in the past year, strategically quit capoeira. And I've strategically quit cooking, which is one of my favorite quits, because it was causing me the most anxiety. Like, in a day, you have to feed yourself 3 times a day. And 3 times a day, I would kind of freak out about, like, what am I supposed to eat? I would research all the ingredients. And, like, I don't like cooking. So it was just, like, angst-filled. And I didn't like grocery shopping. And, like, at the end of the day, I would just eat almost nothing because I hated doing it so much. And I was not healthy because of that. And I was like, I need to hand this over. This needs to be a thing. I have quit. And it was a huge benefit to my life. I'm never going back. I have quit yoga memberships, realizing that it's more expensive. Like, for me to be in this yoga membership and for it to be worth it, I have to go twice a week. But going twice a week was hard at the time. I was working, I think, 3 jobs. And so I was stressing out about getting to yoga. And I was like, wow, stressing about going to yoga so I can de-stress is really counterproductive. So let me quit this membership and go to, like, a class card. That's such a small quit, but it made a big difference. Because think about our, like, to-do list. And you know, I think every little item on your to-do list at some point can be like a friction point. Like, okay, you haven't done this thing yet. You got to do this, and you got to do this thing, and this thing, and this thing. Well, if I got to go to yoga, and I got to cook, and I got to do all these things, were on my to-do list, and it just was massive by the time I woke up in the morning. I was like, this is not how I want to live my life with all these shoulds, and like, I should go to yoga, and I should be better at cooking. I just, you know, go through and kind of like Marie Kondo your to-do list and figure out what's a should on there that you don't, that doesn't really bring value to your life and that causes more friction than it does benefit. And you can quit those things. And in addition to all those external quits, like I was talking about, quitting mindsets is huge. A lot of quits that you're going to make in relationship or work or other places require that you quit a mindset first. Because if you've been staying in a job because society says that job is great, then maybe the first quit you have to make is quit caring what society thinks about your decisions.
Oh, that's so important, because I think that that's where people get stuck. They get stuck in worrying about what others are going to think because it isn't the norm. And I also see people get stuck when this fear comes up, this fear about quitting, fear about what am I going to do next? How will I be perceived? What do you say to people who have that fear as a stop sign?
Yeah, the first part in overcoming your fears is figuring out what you are afraid of, right? You can't address something nebulous. And like you said, there are many different fears. If the fear is, I'm afraid of what other people are going to think, then we go right back to that thing I just talked about, is you have to quit the mindset of caring what others think. But that's, again, a separate quit. The shortcut to that is I can talk you through the what are other people going to think, because the answer is not much and not for very long. I mean, look at our distraction-filled society, right? Like, how long is anybody thinking about your decision, period? And they might think positively, negatively, or neutrally about it. That only one of those three is bad, right? And if at the end of the day somebody is actually thinking about you and it's actually negative, what impact does that have on your life? Unless that person is like paying your bills or living under a roof with you or like is writing you out of the will because they don't approve of it, the chances are what they think of you for that small amount of time is going to have no bearing on you, as opposed to the fact that you are the one living that life and have to live it 24/7. Like, so am I going to stay in a job 40 hours a week being miserable on the off chance that somebody who, you know, may or may not think negative about me for a few minutes has some thoughts? those thoughts will never affect me, but being in that cubicle 40 hours a week will. So there's many different fears, but once you've addressed or figured out what it is that you're afraid of, there's plenty of logical kind of reasoning that can help you work through those fears.
That's such an important distinction. I think that, you know, so often we get caught up in, you know, worrying so much about what other people's perceptions are of us, but really it's so irrelevant in the grand big scheme of things. I'd love to pivot a little bit and talk about self-care and how it is more than just massages and pedicures and things like that. It's about finding, you know, what you want and looking at the people and activities in your life to determine if they are supporting you. It's about what you love and doing the sometimes hard things to pursue that passion. Can you expand upon your view of self-care?
Absolutely. So I think if you just generically type in self-care to Google, it's like, okay, massage or meditation or maybe get acupuncture or you hang out with some essential oils, all these things. but I think when do most of us do that? I think most of us, like I at least know in my own situation, I don't remember to get a massage until I'm super sore or I'm super stressed, right? And so generally that has come from a thing. So I don't reach for self-care until I need self-care. And a lot of us are not thinking about journaling or meditating or whatever until our stress level gets to the point that we need it, right? Self-care is going to do the most amount of good for us if we can use it to go from neutral, not like in need of it, but okay, we're at baseline, and then we meditate, and then we journal. So then we're using it for like personal development to get to a higher level, you know, get closer to enlightenment or whatever you want to call it, as opposed to continuously using it as like symptomatic relief because, oh, I've had a hard day, so I need to get a massage, or, oh, my boyfriend and I had a fight, I need to go meditate to stop being upset about it. Strategic quitting is going to work to decrease whatever that stress is that makes you need self-care, need to use it as a symptomatic treatment so that you can use it for its initial or its original purpose, which is to bring you to a higher level. Like, do you want to journal just about how mad you are at your boss all day? Or do you want to journal about your like hopes and aspirations for the future? I think probably choice B. I mean, choice A will help you in the strategic quitting and is a definite part of it. But think about if you could just use massages to get you from like, all right, I'm feeling fine to like, hey, I'm defying my age because I'm taking such good care of my body, as opposed to like, man, I've been sitting in this cubicle crumpled over all day, you know, really constricted. And then I get a massage just to feel normal again. So those are the two different ways you can use self-care. And if you use self-care in conjunction with strategic quitting, I see strategic quitting as the basis of all self-care, because if you're using it as symptomatic relief for these stressors, quit as much of the stress as you can, then you can use it for its greater purpose.
Consuming Element on a daily basis is one of my favorite ways to take care of my health. And we know that by consuming proper amounts of electrolytes, it can contribute to quality sleep, which is critical to all of my perimenopause and menopausal patients and clients. We know that magnesium increases a neurotransmitter called GABA that is known for producing calming effects. And consuming adequate levels of sodium can help you sleep through the night because low sodium levels increase cortisol and adrenaline. Additionally, if you are intermittent fasting, it's important to understand that when you fast, two things can dehydrate you. Number one, if your insulin levels remain low, it can signal to our kidneys to excrete more sodium or salt, a process called naturesis. And as glycogen or stored glucose is broken down, the water left over from the glycogen breakdown is urinated out. So if you want to take care of your health in one of my favorite ways, you can consume Element electrolytes. My favorite flavors are grapefruit and citrus, but there are many others to choose from. And if you go to drinkelement.com/Cynthia, you can get a free sample pack to try them out on your own. Again, it's drinkelement.com/Cynthia for your free sample pack where you can try all of their flavors. Weight gain is one of many symptoms that our hormones are in decline, especially as we navigate perimenopause into menopause. Dr. Anna, who is a great friend of mine, is an OBGYN who's treated thousands of women just like you and I who experience increasing dryness and even pain in the bedroom as they get older. Jolva is the solution Dr. Anna formulated for her own clients, and it has since been loved by over 100,000 women. It's a feminine cream with DHEA that helps the body regenerate moisture from the inside out. 92.8% of Jolva users experienced a significant improvement in the first 4 to 8 weeks. Get 10% off your first purchase of Jolva by using the link dranna.com/Cynthia. That's dranna.com/Cynthia and get 10% off your first purchase.
Oh, that's so good. So okay. Good. And then, you know, along with that, you're talking about the stress and quitting things that bring you stress and doing self-care, not just to get out of stress, but to proactively prevent stress and get on the other side of it. So if we think about the health benefits of strategic quitting, I'm imagining that they must look pretty similar to the health benefits of reducing stress. Would you agree with that?
100%. Exactly the same.
Yeah. So we're talking about like better sleep, more productivity, being kinder, better immune function, all those things.
Yeah. I mean, as a physician, I can look at almost any non-musculoskeletal condition. Like short of you broke a leg, most things have a stress-related component. Acid reflux, migraines, chronic insomnia, irritable bowel syndrome, fibromyalgia, all these things. There's a massive stress component. High blood pressure, heart disease. All of those. Mm-hmm. I mean, diabetes, totally. Yes and no, but there's so many conditions that have a stress component that if you reduce that stress, it's definitely a better first step than let's go straight to treating it with some medication, because then you're just treating symptomatically. Again, strategic quitting. Agree. Yeah. Is it just going to get to the root cause of what's leading to that condition? Stop treating the symptoms. Strategic quitting is much more likely to be eradicating whatever it is at baseline, so you don't have the symptoms anymore.
So true. I always tell my clients that if they have a symptom, it's like having a piece of glass in their foot, and mm-hmm. they can maybe take medication or maybe try this or that, and it can be like a Band-Aid on the glass, you know, or it can be some ointment on the glass that'll make it feel better. But until they can get at what the root of the issue is and really remove that glass, then nothing's going to make their foot feel better magically. And so I really think that that's what you're saying strategic quitting does. It gets to the core of what's going on and causing that stress and can remove it for good.
Yes.
I love that analogy, Kelly. That's a great one. And I think that's, you know, two out of three of us having backgrounds in Western medicine, that's absolutely, we've become a very pill focused culture where, you know, like you said, you give a pill that kind of masks the symptoms, and then you're not really addressing the root cause. And so much of illness is related to inflammation and lifestyle choices. And so I think strategic quitting is a really valuable tool for individuals to embrace and use in their lives.
Yeah, absolutely. Part of my own journey, I was taking beta blockers in fellowship because my heart rate was so high when I was in clinic. And finally, I was like, I don't have a heart problem. I have a don't like seeing patients every 13 minutes problem.
Right, right. You're like, it's stress. It's sympathetic overdrive. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing all this. We've gained so much knowledge about quitting. And I think just putting that idea out there that not only is it okay, but it is beneficial to strategically quit. And we always like to ask our guests if they could leave us with two things for our listeners that our listeners could do every day to better support their health. I have a feeling I know what you're going to say for at least one of those, but please, if you'd share with us, that would be great.
Neither of those two are just going to be like, just quit a thing. Like, absolutely not. What I would love for you to do is start spending some time in, and everybody says this, like in stillness or silence. That's kind of rough for some people, because if you are at a point where you have not done any personal development, no self-work, your head may be so full of kind of anxiety producing things that the idea of sitting there with your own thoughts for a while is kind of daunting. So maybe just take a walk in nature. So it's not just like sitting in silence, but you're getting out, you're getting some fresh air, and you can get your creative thought juices flowing and start evaluating your life and start evaluating, like, when am I really lit up during the week? And when am I really bummed out? And just noting that. And then the second step is when you suddenly, and this is like a tuning into your intuition thing, because so many of us have lived in anxiety ridden states for so long that it feels like the new normal. And we don't stop and realize this is not normal. And that's how I was after 10 years of medical school and residency and fellowship. Anxiety was my new normal. We have to reset ourselves. And so then start looking at, when were you feeling totally normal and then suddenly you were feeling anxiety ridden? And then to work it back, what happened between those things. And that's one of the things that helped me quit the startup, because I realized, okay, I was fine 5 minutes ago and now I have a pit in my stomach. Where did that come from? Oh, I just got a call from the founder of the startup. Like, that's what made me anxious. Because you don't, that's the first step in figuring out what you need to quit. If you're like, I know, like, everything is kind of crazy in my life and I'm feeling overwhelmed and I've got the kid thing and the job thing and the husband thing and or the spouse thing, whatever is going on, you may feel anxiety but not know what's causing it, and you don't want to quit the wrong things. So, like, step one, just get out there and start evaluating your life in a place of quasi stillness. And step two is tune into your intuition and learn what it feels like to feel normal versus anxiety ridden, so that when you become anxiety ridden or frustrated or irritated or insert other emotion, then you can stop and realize, hey, this may be a spot that's worth examining for a potential strategic quit.
That's great. And I think if people just were able to do those two things on a regular basis, they would see massive shifts in their life.
Yes, that is the hope. I mean, it's just, we're not taught to sit around and examine our lives. It's not something you get in high school, grade school, college.
Right.
You get the hustle, hustle, hustle. And we're, you know, there's so much danger of us burning out if we hustle, hustle, hustle and never figure out exactly what we enjoy and don't enjoy. We just follow society's path. And I think luckily society's changing to realize that, like, no, it's time that we lived in our purpose and our passions, because that's the only way that this world is going to, like, ever level up is mm-hmm. for us to not be just running around in the rat race all the time, but for us to feel fulfilled.
Right. And I think it takes that kind of conscious shift back to your intuition, like you mentioned, to recognize that and to start changing that at a neurophysiological level in your brain. As we do that, then we're able to have that more parasympathetic response become the norm rather than this yes. anxiety ridden stress response.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. We know our listeners are definitely going to want to hear more from you and to find out more about what you do. Could you please tell them where they can find you and what you offer?
Absolutely. You can go to quittingbydesign.com, where you can find my book, which is Quitting by Design. You can find my podcast there. It's called Quit Happens, which is also on all the pod places. And you can find my coaching. I do one-on-one coaching, and I have an online coaching program as well called Make Quit Happen. Both of those run you not only through whatever quit you may be going through, but they teach the strategic quitting process along the way, so that after your current quit, you can apply it to the rest of your life, every future thing that you would like to evaluate. And then on Facebook and Instagram, I'm Quitting by Design. I have a Facebook group called Quitopia for the proud strategic quitters, where we can all support each other in our quits. And I have a YouTube channel called Quitting by Design, where you can find the actual face-to-face versions of all my podcasts, the videos of the interviews, and every week I do a quit of the week and on my Facebook, and I put those there as well.
Well, thank you so much for jumping on with us this morning. I've learned so much, and I know that our listeners will as well.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate this chat.
Thank you so much for joining us. You can find out more about Cynthia and her work at chtwellness.com. And you can find out more about Kelly and her work at everydaytherapist.com. In addition, if you have questions for us or topics you'd like us to address, please email us at everydaywellnesspodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, be well.